Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Exploring our oneness with spirit and each other. Unity Online Radio. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to today's show on World Spirituality. Yes, I'm your host, John Roach, coming to you from Bass Harbor in Maine in New England. And the connection is not greatest, so if I get cut off, it's because I'm in the wilds of Maine. Once again with my wife, Wendy. Hi, Wendy.
Hello.
This is our last show in our 10-week sabbatical that we've been taking with the World Spirituality on the road. Therefore, we wanted to do something. I'm not sure if I'm still on. I am. Okay, good. No need to pause then. All right. Therefore, we wanted to do a recap of some of the things we've experienced, appreciated, and learned on this 10-week journey that took us to Scotland. Close to 6 weeks, England, Washington State, British Columbia, and finally Maine, with two stops in Dallas-Fort Worth for a wedding that I conducted and to celebrate my second grandchild's first birthday. So, what have we experienced and why? I think the first thing you have to ask yourself is, you know, what is a sabbatical? And it's a little different from a vacation or a holiday or time apart, and it's a little different from a retreat too, because a retreat is a very intentional period, just come away from the world. We've still been in the world, but it's not like a vacation where you're filling it with all fun activities. This is more intentional, time away from your normal work, in this case 29 years at Unity Fort Worth, and a time to reflect, but also to experience the environment, different people, and get a feel for how it all unfolds. You know, get in the way can yield insights that you can't get to when you're so involved with your workaday world. And the cool thing is that Reverend Patricia Bass, who's my replacement, my acting senior minister for the last 10 weeks, has also been conducting a sabbatical with the people at my church community, and going through some of the Greek principles of unity is a revival type thing. And so they've had their experience. So part of the ongoing fun of this is we're going to share our experiences when we get back. So it'll be a double blessing for me and the congregation. So having said that then, so what have we experienced? And I'm going to ask Wendy in a second. So be thinking, Wendy. She's already got something. Here we go.
Well, I want to say, first of all, what Paul was saying about being on sabbatical and it being different from a vacation is that we intentionally chose places to be that would promote the being of being in nature and the things that we know open us up to that greater mind and the greater thought. Which being nature is something that that does do that for us. So we intentionally chose places that we knew that there would be quiet. We knew that there would be nature that we could explore by walking through it and being a part of it and then being in silence there. And I think we've done a good job of that. It's we've been to some beautiful places.
I agree, and we've focused mostly on the ocean because we both like the sea. Plus, Wendy's a sailor, and so she spent a lot of time playing around and actually competing on boats and, over many years. And so the ocean and the sea is has been an inspiration for her for a long time, as it is to me. I think growing up where I did in Britain, where you're only ever the most you can be inland is about 64 miles, I think, from the sea. In any part of England, so you're never far from the sea, and England and Wales, I should say, because Wales is where I grew up, and so we focused on being on the ocean. We will love mountains as well, so Pacific Northwest and Scotland, you know, are blessed with having mountains coming down to the sea. Same here in Maine, there's mountains very close to the sea, and so it's the combination of those two. And then nature itself, being away from things. We've spent a few days in cities, but mostly we've been out in the countryside, and that's a choice to get away. The cities are great, but you know, that's another trip. We wanted to be immersed in the natural scenery. And I think I've counted about 30 or 40 species of birds since we've been in Maine that we've noticed. It's been fantastic to see how many different birds, because I'm a bit of a bird watcher, enjoy that too.
So, you know, one of the other things being away and moving around is that each place that we've come to, we've sort of nested, speaking of birds, and made our own nest, made something that was special to us and comfortable to us. And it brings me to the thought of, or has brought me to the thought of, that you can intentionally make a place of your own, a peaceful, secure place of your own, wherever you happen to be, and to identify what that means to you, I think is important. So then you have a place that you can totally relax wherever you happen to be, including in the midst of having to drive home in heavy traffic, that you can still look forward to that particular spot that you've intentionally put together.
Yeah, very good. Very good point. And which leads me into one of the big lessons that I've learned or appreciated the most on this trip, and that's the idea of the emptiness and the void, because we live in emptiness. You know, there's a sense of all the created things or the reality. But if you pursue it a little deeper, you'll find that all those things come and go. They're subject to time and change, but there is some essence which many traditions call the void or the emptiness, which is not quite emptiness. It's full of possibility, but it's not limited in any way. And we've both had a lot of experiences of that on this trip. You know, beyond all the things that are going on, the rhythms. There's the emptiness, and the good news about the emptiness is you can create your own sense of place or reality wherever you are. So you're not dependent on the conditions out there, although sometimes we feel we are. You know, we're so attached to our bodies or to our possessions or to our money that we feel limited by those things. But the reality is that we are capable of transcending those things because they are not necessarily who we truly are. So if that's the case, then we can transform our bodies, you know, by our attitudes. We can transform our situation by, like Wendy's saying, nesting, by finding that sense of safety and peace that the world can't give. And we can find a sense of rightness in everything that unfolds. That's been another thing for me, and I know Wendy's feels the same way, and that's we've loved watching the rhythms of everything, the rhythms of the stars. It's particularly beautiful here in Maine to see the stars. We saw the Milky Way the other night. The rhythms of the tides, because we've been, as we say, next to the ocean, so watching that rhythm coming and going, and the majesty of things, the endless miracles of nature, and And the fact that we are magnificent too. You know, sometimes we settle for second or third best in our self-appreciation. But the reality is that we're amazingly magnificent beings. It's a miracle that we're here at all. And we're not meant to fill our lives up with the superficial, but to illuminate the superficial with a joyous understanding.
And so that sort of segues into the identity part of it. And who are you? What identity are you walking around with? You got an ID tag that says mom? Do you have an ID tag that says preacher? Do you have an ID tag that says husband or wife? And like Paul was just alluding to, that you can magnify those things and make them beautiful, but it's that beautiful essence of us being truly just a being, just a magnificent being, that then magnifies over into those ID labels. And sometimes we get that wrong. Sometimes we get so caught up in what we're being, what we're doing. I mean, we were just watching our daughter Miriam run around after the children, and I was exhausted just watching her do it from my perspective of being a 57-year-old grandmother. But at one point in time, I was a young 36-year-old or 35-year-old mom too. And so, you know, life changes and identities change. And I think one of the blessings that Paul and I both have learned on this trip is, if you strip away those identities by being aware of what they are and how they affect you, then it gives you room to grow because you're more than just the ID tag that you wear.
Right. And if you missed the last week's show, you might want to tune in on the archives, because my daughter Miriam was the person that we discussed the show with, some ideas around parenthood, ideas around her spiritual path. She's been in Unity since she was very young, and is now married into an Indian family, and so has embraced some of those teachings. And so it made for an interesting show, so check that out. That was last Tuesday, September 19th, 2017. And one of the things that I've been studying a lot since I've been on this trip has been some Tibetan Buddhist books, and I've quoted some of them over the period of 10 weeks, but I've also been involved in somebody that I truly love, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, the great saint of Bombay, an unlikely saint, because he was a man who lived in a tenement in a very simple neighborhood. He sold Indian cigarettes, bidis, and died of throat cancer eventually, but taught for many years and wrote the great book, I Am That. But I came across another book called Pointers from the Nisargadatta Maharaj, and it was together by Ramesh S. Balsekar, who was president of the Bank of India, I think. And when he retired, he turned to spiritual things and became a follower of Nisargadatta. And in this book, there's a short chapter that I'd like to read and see what you think about it, too. It's Maharaj or himself. And it says, what knowledge can I give to the people who come here seeking knowledge? Asked Maharaj one evening. Most of those who come here are so completely identified with their bodies, which is what we just talked about, that in spite of all their sincerity, they must surely find what I say unacceptable. Even those who may sense the subtlety and depth of the teaching may not be able to perceive its real significance. But those who intuitively apprehend what I say will need but one session with me. I think we've all been there. You know, it can be right under our noses, but we don't see it until we're ready. And even if we're sincere, we're using our heads too much instead of an intuitive understanding. We don't trust our intuition. We want to know it intellectually, and these deep things cannot be understood intellectually, I don't believe. Wendy shared her experience with the laundry on the Isle of Lewis, and the fact that she kind of disappeared as an identity and was present to the simple act of doing the laundry. but it was a very mystical act, you know, and not like, oh my goodness, look how profound I am, but just, this is...
What the heck is happening?
Yeah, what the heck is happening?
What is this?
I disappeared. Where'd I go? Well, you didn't go anywhere because you weren't really here in the first place. So so anyway, Maharaj lays out some of his key points. He says, let's look at the first one. I am always present because I am always absent. Well, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? And I am only present when I am absent. To elucidate this, I would add that I am always present absolutely, but relatively my apparent presence is my apparent absence. And so I think what he's saying is, you know, when you're in the reality of who you are, the Christedness, the Buddha nature, the absolute, you no longer identify with the relative. So you're absent from the relative, but more fully present than you ever were, because the relative is not real. It comes and goes, and you can get lost in that. So he's saying, I'm present because I'm always absent from my identification with things that come and go. And that's the experience with the laundry, I think. And this is not an abstruse thing, or it sounds like it's the intellect, but I think it's a very real thing. It's saying, you know, do you really need to get hooked by everything that comes along? Get taking it personally, getting overwhelmed by it. It's an option. Number two, he says, I who am no thing is everything I am not. So there he is again. But the apparent universe is myself. So I contain everything, but I'm not dependent upon everything. Even in Maine, by the way, there's a few sounds that you may be hearing in the background. The motorbike on the road, the lawnmower. Summer is here again, and the lawnmowers are sounding in our land, as they say. But don't be distracted. We are none of these things.
Like a wave of the ocean.
And a wave of the ocean, there we go. And then third, he says, after all the yous and me's have negated one another, I shall remain as I. So, you know, this I idea is the I am, isn't it? It's the presence of God. You know, in the Old Testament, when God was asked to name himself, didn't want to do it because you can't name these things. But eventually he said, I am that I am. And Jesus alluded to that when he used the I am statements, I am the way, the truth, and the life. He was referring to the I am consciousness, the absolute within him and everyone. That is beyond any time or change, any relativity. It just is. He says, how could you love me? You are what I am. How could you hate me? I am what you are. So when we understand there's only one of us here, you know, there's nothing to love or hate. And I think, he's talking about absolute now. You know, we can still love each other. We can still have compassion. But he's saying that a lot of love that we think is love is really based on dependency rather than on freedom. So that's a huge one, too. Number five, Wendy, you got something on that one.
Well, it's something big that I, in my mind, a saying that I have is it codependency or is it compassion? Are you thinking you're loving something because you're giving love or because you're needy or you're there's a payoff for it or something like that? So there's the difference there.
Yeah, I had a person on my show a few weeks ago who said that codependency was selfish altruism. Which is the same idea. You know, we're doing something nice for someone else, not because we're freely giving that gift, but because we expect something back. So there's a sort of selfish attitude, and codependency can be like that. We're needy, and therefore we want to be completed. So we think if we're nice, we'll get that sense of completion because somebody will recognize our kindness. There's a crow agreeing with what we're saying, I think, or disagreeing. You're not disagreeing, are you? All right. And then next one is never having been born, how could I die? Never having been bound, what is the need for me to seek liberation? And Sri Nagasadana talks a lot about this idea that, the idea of gaining enlightenment is an illusion, because if you are not yourself anyway. You can't enlighten your ego. I have an enlightened ego now, and I'm free. Well, you never were bound in the first place. Your true self has always been itself. And so this search for enlightenment is kind of counterproductive. It's not going to get us anywhere. In fact, often we can push away, quote, enlightenment because we think it's something to gain instead of simply releasing all the things we thought we were and discovering we've had it all along. And that's kind of catches us unawares sometimes. I think, man, I've done a lot of work here on my spiritual progress, my spiritual path. And now you're telling me I don't need to do anything? What the hell? I feel like we've been shortchanged. But that's part of this. I think we are supposed to be amazed. I think it's in the Gospel of Thomas. It says, when you seek me, first you'll be confused, then you'll be astonished, and finally you'll be free. And I think we have to go through that annoyance of thinking, man, I was barking up the wrong tree all along. I thought it was one way, and now it's another.
The danger lies also in, and what do you say about you worship the finger pointing at the moon instead of the moon? You worship the path, and you get so in enthralled with that and so into that that you forget that you limit what enlightenment is, or you limit what the goal of that beautiful, magnificent, higher thinking, higher mind, spiritualness.
Right. Number six, Maharaj says, how can the relative judge the absolute? The absolute is indeed the relative when the relative no longer is relative. He's got a way with words, doesn't he? When the relative gives up all that makes it relative, in the absence of the physical form, consciousness is not conscious of itself. And he talks a lot about that in the book, they nest in each other, that consciousness with a small c and the body dwell together, and that they give meaning to each other. But when you enter into consciousness with a capital C, there's no one to perceive. It just is. And so you're not aware of it anymore in that human sense. You go into a whole different dimensional reality. It's a bit like in deep sleep where you're not aware of yourself being alive even. And yet you know that you were. You've been, you went to sleep and they woke up. But where were you in deep sleep when there was no dreams, where there was nothing? There was this sense of emptiness. And it's that kind of spacious emptiness that we're talking about. It's not, you haven't gone anywhere. You've just entered into a deeper awareness of who you are, which can be quite frightening when you're used to being in relation to everything else, in relation to where you are, in relation to other people, in relation to all the work you need to do, in relation to your identity. In 7, he says, where were you before you were born? And again, before we became us, and that happened without our conscious awareness. We were came out of our mother's womb, but we didn't say this is the way it's supposed to be. All of a sudden, yeah, we were. 8, preferences or differences are all conceptual balderdash. They can only appear relatively. Absolutely, there could be no appearances, and therefore no preferences or differences. And, in unity, we would say that, there's always a blessing within everything. And that the reason for that is we choose to see the absolute good in everything, regardless of how it appears. So if we say it's bad, that's a choice. If we say it's good, that's a choice. But if we say there's a blessing to everything. So it's not saying that there is no bad things, that maybe they are bad. Somebody dies, we got a disease, that's bad. But we don't have to label it as unfortunate for us. It can be our greatest lesson. There's a blessing there. So it's not shortcutting or spiritually bypassing the pain, but it's saying even within this pain, there is a blessing. And I think that's an important point, because it's not trying to get beyond all the things that happen to us in the relative. They're going to happen. Like we said, Srinagasagadatta died of throat cancer, had great pain in the later parts of his life. But that wasn't the reality of who he was.
Well, I think, you know, part of this is like if you're thinking from the smaller C consciousness, then you think this is a horrible thing. And if you try to, like, for instance, if your spouse dies, you might think, oh, this is the end of my life or my love. Or and thinking from your smaller C consciousness, that might be so. Opening to that higher C or that larger C consciousness, then you realize that there is with life there's death and that everything changes, and so you are able to with a different perspective. And the same thing with spiritual bypassing. If you're thinking, oh well, this too will pass, and you know, the grief has a rhythm and a flow, and I'll get over it, and you're spiritual bypassing something that might have happened to you, then and still trying to comfort the ego. And what I certainly cannot pronounce this gentleman's name. What the book is trying to say is that you have to enter into that higher consciousness, into that broader spectrum, to be able to have a different perspective in a different way and let over you and fulfill your life.
Right. Very good. All right, finally, he says, collect all the knowledge you want, both worldly and unworldly, and then offer it as a sacrifice to the Absolute. And so, yeah, there's nothing wrong with knowing a lot about different things, you know. But ultimately, they're offerings, aren't they, to something larger, you know. Otherwise, we're lost in the various information that we have, you know, and that's no fun to be lost in it. It's a useful tool, perhaps, but ultimately it has to be jettisoned so that we can move into that spacious, absolute, beautiful place, which is the Christ consciousness. You know, the minute we start conceptualizing about it, it's no longer the Christ consciousness. It's not something to own. It's something to be. And I think sometimes we think like I can own these things. I can become these things. I'll learn what it is to be there. I got it down now. When you can't get this stuff down, it's new every moment. And he ends by saying, what will the listener think of me? What can he think of me? Is not the only conclusion he could come to, said Maharaj with a mighty laugh, that I am absolutely as well as relatively crazy. And of course, you know, to the world's terms, you know, this stuff is crazy, isn't it?
Is that like a big C or a little C?
A little C. He's not totally crazy. But you have to be a little bit crazy, I think, to be on the spiritual path in general, if you're really intent about it, because you're going against the trend of the world, which is mostly in a trance of stuff, of things, of all the little minutiae that make up our lives. One thing I've been interested in, and this isn't a judgment, but it's listening to the talk on the trails. You know, there's a lot of people on the trails here in Acadia, and you tend to hear them because they talk loudly. You think they'd be quiet in nature, but not always the case. But some of the talk is, you know, very mundane things, and it's not that there's anything wrong with that, but we it's like mirroring for me. What do I fill my mind with? You know, most of the time we fill our minds with all the minute details of our neediness, of all the things we have to do today. And that's fine, but you know, we can get lost in that if we're not careful, and we forget to be present to the magnificence. So it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Being in the world, but not of the world. You know, to be doing all those things, but not to see them as the only thing that's happening.
And some people could not even fathom that you of and really think it's crazy with the big C. For you to live a life that, if in the quiet, you have a feeling, and that feeling, whether you call it intuition, whatever you want to call it, that feeling is what guides you, maybe what makes you peaceful and comfortable and willing to relax into waiting for the next thing to happen, or waiting for the next for your life to unfold without having to push the river.
Right. Folks, we're talking about our last week, in our last week, I should say, focusing on the previous 10 weeks we've been on sabbatical. And so we're wrapping it up and thinking about where we've been, what we've experienced, appreciated, talking about some of the books and the ideas that are percolated through. And I've been unpacking a little bit of Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj and what he believes. We're going to take a two-minute break. When we come back, we'll look at some of the other things we've appreciated and learned from our trip, from our sabbatical. Join us then.
Unity Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation. Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support. Now available, YouPray, the free prayer app from Silent Unity. For more than a century, people from all over the world and all walks of life have turned to Silent Unity. With YouPray, our confidential prayer support is easy and convenient to access. With YouPray, you can send your prayer directly to Silent Unity. YouPray also includes affirmations you can share with family and friends, plus audio meditations for your prayer time. For more about the free YouPray app and links to download, visit silentunity.org/app. That's silentunity.org/app.
I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. This is the 10th show in our World Spirituality on the Road. So we're concluding our sabbatical and really summing up where we've been, what we've experienced, what we feel we've learned. I'm sure we'll find we've learned more when we get back. You know how that works. You don't really appreciate it until you move to the next stage. By the way, if you are interested in going to any of the places that we visited, be happy to tell you a little bit about them or any other information you might want about how to get away, especially if you want to go to Rona, which is the island we went to where there's no one else on it, basically, except the custodians and a couple other people. So that's a real getaway from civilization. One of the things I wanted to talk about was, none of this happens in a vacuum. And everywhere you go, there's people around you, and especially now with so many tourists everywhere on the planet. Whether they be tourists or locals, you bump into people, and we've had many interesting experiences. We shared one a couple of weeks ago about a man who just showed up on the beach and started talking about some changes in his life. We also have experienced people going through some difficulties and struggling. Like we say, everyone we meet is fighting a great battle, as we are ourselves. And so that was interesting to deal with some of those hurt people, people struggling. Also, people, you know, looking at their lives. It's amazing how many people we've met who have been around the same age as we are, and going through that life change. The wonderful person who runs Rona and his wife are musing about, you know, what do I do with the rest of my life now? I'm in my 60s. And so, but any stage we're at, there's always that feeling, isn't there? What's next? Where do I go? So one thing I'm inspired by is people who maintain a sense of childlike quality. I was reading some Walter de la Mare, the old English, and not old, I shouldn't say, the 19th, 20th century English poet. It was a kind of a chestnut when I was growing up. But I understand he wrote Tales of the Macabre as well and won some prizes for that. But my friend Simon is a fan of Walter de la Mare, but he was quoting some Walter the other day, and I was impressed by it, and I read some information about Walter de la Mare, and he said there were two kinds of imagination, the childlike and then the boyish, as he called it. The childlike is where you know, dream and you imagine things, you play pretend, you're vast, there's no limits. And then as you begin to go to school, this boyish imagination takes over, which we would say the logical mind takes over, and you spend more time thinking things through rather than just imagining them. And so lose sight sometimes of that, the world. And we call it childish, you know. Oh, well, those would play make-believe, pretend stuff. That's not real. I need to get to the real world. But, you know, to my way of thinking, that childlike imagination is probably closer to reality than some of the logic and reason that we apply to everything. Not that that doesn't have its uses, but it limits us from seeing the wonder of things. And some of the friends that I've met and people we've met on the trip have exemplified that childlike quality. And my friend Liam, who I interviewed in Hastings, drummer, he exhibits that and wanders down the street, you know, talking to everybody and having some fun, waking people up, in a sense, out of their normal reality, and inviting them to step outside. Now, even if sometimes it seems like he's playfully insulting them, I think he's seeing where they're going to go with it. You know, how they're going to respond. And there's something delightful about that, because he doesn't do it with evil intent. He does it to just to see what'll happen. You know, to make some fun go on. And and it's interesting when you meet certain people and you're inspired by them. It can happen anywhere, of course. And I think we have to be open to that. We met a girl, I think we talked about it on the show, who was working on the pier in Hastings, and she was part of the crew installing some new lighting. But she was interestingly dressed. She had some kind of headgear on. And it was a hot day. She had her sleeves and ankles rolled up and on the trousers, and had lots of tattoos. But she had a twinkle in her eyes. She was a delightful young woman. And I thought, you know, she has her own unique style, and there she is doing a, quote, male thing, you know, which thankfully is not male any longer, right? We can have any profession, which is great. And I love to see that, people breaking through apparent barriers. We need to do that more in our society. Anybody, Wendy, that you met on this trip that stands out for you, that you're still resonating with, that you want to talk about? Maybe you don't want to talk about.
She was definitely one of them. I mean, she was a character, and she definitely was one of them. And of course, Liam is interesting, a very interesting person also. You know, we've met so many different people, and it's I think more than who we've met, it's been interesting how it's like we're sitting there and something comes to you, or we just are there, and then it's like this person appears almost. It's a really sort of has a mystical feeling to it when it's when that happens. And it's a lot of times when we've been sitting still and just relaxing wherever we happen to be. And you know, I'm reminded of the Japanese people who, when they have a transaction with you, they actually touch hand to hand, touch maybe, and eye to eye contact, and they have a transaction with you, and it's intense. It's intense for our U.S. way of doing things, should I say?
Interesting too. We were in Kamakuchi in Japan a few years ago, up in the mountains of the Japanese Alps, and there's a famous trail there through the woods. Beautiful place. All kinds of running water and beautiful mountains, deep forests, and monkeys and bears all around. But we didn't see any of those, but we saw a lot of people on the path. And every single one would say a greeting, right?
Yeah,
konnichiwa. And often lift up their hands in a namaste gesture. And I compared and contrasted that to going on walks here in the States, especially on the East Coast, where people are a little more reserved, I think, than some from Texas, where I live, and sometimes they didn't want to even say anything back, you know. And that's fine. We're on a walk, you know. You're supposed to be enjoying nature, not interacting with necessarily with other people. But when she did interact with them, generally they were very friendly and often passed a few, you know, a moment of humor or comments. But it definitely wasn't a given that somebody would say, hello, how you doing, konnichiwa. But I think the Japanese loved it in that mountain. They were very proud of their natural inheritance that they have. They were exuberant in that nature, and they appreciate it very much. And so they were happy to be there. They were happy that you were there. And there's something to be said for ritual, in that sense, you know, the Japanese society's many ways a very ritualized society. But I think it can have its benefits because it leads to mindfulness. I think, you know, ritual can often, limit us in some way, but it can also free us. So musing about some of our unity folks, you know, we don't like rules because rules get in the way. But you know, the other side of that is we all have rules, whether we like it or not. We decide we're going to have a service that starts at 9:30 or 11, you know. That, I guess that's a rule, isn't it? And so you show up for that. So some things work better, you know, like for instance, if I drive on the wrong side of the street, it's not going to be a good experience for me. So I obey that rule. So, to throw out everything as we sometimes do because we want to be different and free, misses the point, you know, still manipulating the relative rather than enjoying the absolute. Because in the absolute, we can have all the rules we want and still be free. So anyway, food for thought there. A little bit of an issue for me right now, because I need to go back to my community and see how all that works. Because I want to have that freedom that we espouse in unity, but... I don't want just to have the allowing any old thing to happen. You know, I think there's an elegance that comes when we have some regulated ways of approach.
Well, there's got to be something to be said about it's good for all. It's good for all. It's not for a few people. It's good for all.
Yes.
And that's a difficult thing to get your head around when you think, well, but it's limiting me. But is it good for all? So it's neither. It doesn't have to be a limitation just because it's good for all. I think that what we do is we have an either or. Well, it's either that way or it's this way. And it's like nobody stops and really looks at all the points. Nobody stops and looks at the other person's point with compassion and says, how can I incorporate that aspect into what I feel and what I want and need, and how can what I want and need be help promote what is good for all as our community together. In this particular case, as Paul's talking about, if it happens to be your neighborhood or your church or community or whatever community that you live in, your family, just your family unit. But more so, I think that
we get stuck and no, that's not how I feel. And so you come to a block, and it's opening up to that higher conscious realm of perspective, so that you can, with compassion, look at the other person's point of view and incorporate it in and think creatively.
Right, think creatively. And, you know, we don't talk politics on this show particularly, but you can't avoid it if you're living here in the States right now at the end of September. The brinkmanship that's going on between this country and Japan, North Korea, and some of the statements that are being put out by both sides. And you think, you know, is this really embracing both ends? You know, this is very either or way of looking at things, and very unfortunate because it doesn't seem to be a mature way of approach. And, these bully tactics just don't help. And I think, you know, we have to ask ourselves in our own lives, you know, in what ways am I mature, or am I buying into sort of childish, not childlike, but childish immaturity, taking things personally, having myself, my humanness on the line when we don't need to do that. There's a higher way.
And childishness, yes, but it's like working from a lower chakra, from the warrior stance. So, you know, working from the lower chakra, and the warrior also has to have the heart. The warrior has to have a responsibility to bring in that, is this good for all? So it's incorporating the rest of the aspects of ourselves and of our world that makes that talk go from maybe immature to a more rounded, compassionate way of thinking. And that is a choice, and it only takes one person to make that choice and make the difference.
Right. And that person, of course, is always us, isn't it? We can only do what we can do. And we can make a huge difference when we choose to not play along, for instance, you know, to do something different. Even when we don't play along with the committee in our head and say, no, I'm not going there anymore, that's not productive. All right, Wendy's got another example. She's on a roll, folks. Hold on.
Well, I was just thinking about the difference of what we say to ourselves in our head and, like, watching the news and stuff. And the other day, you know, after we sort of kind of surfaced and had a little bit of time to turn on the news and see what's going on in the world, and we were first affected by coming off of the Isle of Rona and to a text I had from my daughter who lives in Houston, who said, if you heard, there was a hurricane and we are okay. And for the moment they were okay. So and they turned out okay in the end also, but surfacing and hearing the hurricane, the earthquake of Mexico, the hurricanes coming through the islands that I've sailed and loved and have explored just devastated by the what has happened there and for those people. And so sitting there watching the news, I mean, yes, I want to be informed. Yes, I need to be informed. I need to know. And I was thinking, what can I do from afar? What can I do? What is mine to do here? How can I be of help here? Because I don't have the tools to just drop everything and go down there and be an assistant. There's a people that are trained to do those first responder type things, and there's I can't restore electricity and et cetera, et cetera. But what can I do? And I thought, you know, I'm listening to this and I'm feeling sad, but if I leave my thought pattern in that sad, oh my God, the world's coming to an end type thought pattern, then I have not helped the overall and the good for everyone. So what I said to myself is, peace has to begin with me. I have a peace, a stillness, a still point in me that I know, and I know it quite well. And I can get in contact with that. And with that, I can radiate that. And I can send that to those people, because I do believe that, like a radio wave, that can connect with other people that can do the same thing. So when we look at tragedy like it's what we've seen on television lately, and and Mother Nature being destructive, we can send that peace out to those people that if it maybe just a nutshell gets to them, just a little corn of it gets to them, that it could possibly bring them a sigh of relief from wherever they happen to be at the time and give them the ability to do the things that are theirs to do.
Right. Good point. And also, you know, if you want to do something physical, you can support communities and agencies. I know we did a food drive at Unity Fort Worth. I know many other Unity churches have done things, you know, that are practical as well. But I think holding consciousness is huge. We believe that in Unity, that if enough of us hold thoughts, there's going to be a change. It's a critical mass. Wendy said, no, just one. And maybe that's true. You know, it only took Jesus Christ, didn't it, to shift the whole world in a different direction. So, yeah, there's power to individual consciousness. I also believe there's such a thing as a critical mass. When enough people are thinking a certain thing or choose a different way, then the whole universe shifts. There's a paradigm shift. When a new invention comes along, you know, we never thought we could be on the phone like we are today or be connected on the internet, but now we can't seem to live without it. But point being, it came as an idea in somebody's head, it was manifest, and now it's shifted everything. So powerful ideas come along and could change the tenor and the importance of things for us. So it's fascinating to see how that can work. We're all on the cusp of a paradigm shift. We don't have to stay stuck. So wrapping up this show, what would we say? I feel like a sense of completion, but then we found out just as towards the end of the show that Wendy has the opportunity to go to Australia on a work project in October. And so initially I thought, oh no, we're going back home and she's going to leave again. But then I thought, well, yeah, but you should get the opportunity to do that project, which is cool. So I get to go home and percolate some of the ideas that have happened while she heads off on another venture. So, you know, you never know what's going to happen and unfold. So I thought, oh, we've been away, now we're coming back, we're going to do all the things together. Doesn't always end up that way. And I think, so the lesson for me there is, you know, stay flexible. It's not always what you imagine it to be. You know, the unexpected, the unlikely can occur. But, you know, it's a blessing in it because it's definitely a blessing for her, and I'm sure it will be for me.
And I have to say, it's a privilege to think that I'm going to go to Australia. Actually, my niece and her husband bought a historical home in Sydney, Australia, and I'm going to go work on the design and the construction of it for a short period of time just to help them over some humps. And it's a privilege for me not only to work on their home, but also to work on a historical project. That's always a blessing in my business. But I have to say that one of the things I was wondering, what am I going to do when I get home? Because I'm getting old, the sweat dropping in my eyes as I'm trying to read a measuring stick with my bad eyesight and my progressive glasses and my knees cricking and I can barely bend down and get up.
Oh my God. Sounds terrible.
People have to help me get up off the floor.
Yeah, it can't be that bad.
And, no, it's not that bad, but it is. So, I mean, construction's a dirty business and I've enjoyed it over the years, but so I was thinking, what is mine to do here? What is going to happen to me? And, when I get home, and it was interesting because in one of my sort of meditative states, I thought, I will know. It will reveal itself, and I will know what is mine to do. And it was interesting because I became very relaxed after that. And of course, it has. It has revealed itself to me.
So the words I like is when she said, "I'm going there for a short period of time." Not like hard. Not 6 months.
We could probably, Paul and I could probably do a whole nother radio show, maybe another whole 10-week series on. No. What we were talking about, the enmeshment and isolation and being a couple.
Dependency.
Dependency, yeah. and what that looks like and who we are as individuals and how we have to be a whole individual to be to come together. And
right.
We could do a whole nother section on
that. Well, and of course, we just spent 10 weeks completely together, you know, because we've been in each other's pocket, really, because that's what you do when you're traveling together. So the idea of being apart is interesting. So it's I see it as the another aspect of the learning that we've done on sabbatical. So it's all good. So we're at the end of the show. Thank you so much for following us on this tandemic journey. If you've missed a few shows, check them out. There have been some excellent ones. I'm really pleased that we were able to actually do all the 10 shows because we were in some remote places. I wasn't sure if we're going to get in the connection, but we did. Let me tell you about next week. Next week, I welcome Itzhak Beery once again to the show. He's been on a couple of times before. It was interesting. He'll talk about his new book, Shamanic Healing, and a very insightful man. I think you'll enjoy it. So Shamanic Healing next week. And so we say farewell. This is our last post in on our journey, and we'll be back in Dallas-Fort Worth next Tuesday.
Looking forward to seeing our friends and our community, our church community, and loving everyone.
Absolutely. It'll be fantastic to be back. I'm looking forward to Sunday. I'm going to do a joint sermon with the acting senior minister, Patricia, and that should be a blast. And then we'll be back into the swing of things at Unity Fort Worth. So if you're a Unity Fort Worth member or attender listening, we are looking forward to seeing you very much. And love you and appreciate everybody that tunes into this Worship and Awakening World and supports World Spirituality. All right, take care now. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org. Just like life, grief is a journey, not a destination. Whether it is loss of life, relationship, security, or simply the process of change, have you given yourself permission to begin your journey of grief? Have you yielded to the gift of grace? Join Reverend Chaz Wesley every Thursday at 5 p.m. Central on a virtual navigation from grief to grace, and explore new horizons of empowerment, significance, and support. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'll light a candle in your name.
The optimist sees the good in all things, builds upon the most hopeful and cheerful view of matters, and expects the best possible outcome. The pessimist, unwilling to look for the good, rarely finds it. Both optimism and pessimism are states of mind. They are attitudes, not events. The words we most often use reflect our strongly held thoughts and affect every area of our lives. If you're finding more frustration than fulfillment in your life, take a look at what you're thinking. Find something more positive to think, say, or do. Begin building a happier, more satisfying life for yourself today as you choose to look for and find the good in every person and circumstance. This Law of Life is brought to you by Unity.
To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.